Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
And joining us right now, Principal Deputy Press Secretary for the White House, Raj Shah, joining us here on Mornings on the Mall. Raj, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks a lot for having me on, guys.
Really, really great to have you. I want to add, because we want to ask you a lot of questions, including about especially immigration this week, the president holding that bipartisan meeting earlier at the White House, getting congressmen and senators together to find out what it is their priorities are. And as he was going through that meeting, a lot of his supporters left a bit confused. You heard people like Ann Coulter and Tucker Carlson coming out this week saying, I don't know if this is what we want. What would be in the first piece of legislation if a DACA deal is reached?
Well, let me just say, I was in the room for that meeting, both the part that was open to the cameras and the part that wasn't. What you saw was a president with a real strong command of the issue, understanding, you know, what works and doesn't. Somebody who talks to the Border Patrol and Border Patrol agents and a DHS secretary frequently about this issue. He does understand what's necessary for both securing the border and ensuring that it's enforced, but also trying to show some compassion toward the individuals who have come here as children illegally. So what the president's looking at is a bill of some sort that Congress negotiates that reaches some consensus on four issues, four topics. One is DACA and providing some sort of permanent fix for these individuals. The others are chain migration and ensuring that the individuals who are legalized then can't bring in dozens and dozens of family members. Also, the issue of border security and a physical barrier. The border wall is essential, and the president reiterated that yesterday. And then looking at that visa lottery system, the system that has brought in so many individuals from countries who, frankly, don't want to, they can't qualify to come here, and so they get thrown in a lottery system. It's maybe the most ridiculous immigration program that exists. So it's a narrowed scope that'll ensure that less illegal immigration comes into the country when we grant some sort of legal rights to this protected status.
So all four of those elements, DACA, chain migration, border security, and the diversity visa lottery, would be a part of a single piece of legislation?
Yeah, that's correct. That's what we're looking at, and those are the principles that the Democrats and Republicans walked out of that meeting talking about. Obviously, Democrats are going to put some emphasis on one over another, and Republicans likewise. But, you know, the president mediated a discussion that really narrowed the focus and I thought made some real progress.
Now, you say all this. We were left with a different impression a little bit earlier. We spoke with Kayleigh McEnany from the RNC. She said that the wall and DACA may be together in a single piece of legislation with everything else maybe for another piece of legislation. You're saying that's not true. All for one piece of legislation on the president's desk.
Well, I think the wall and border security measures might be the stickiest point. I think that there was pretty broad consensus that reforms to the chain migration program and the visa lottery program were areas where Democrats agree quite a bit with Republicans. So the wall and border security really do seem to be areas where you know, we're going to have to work together. And I think Democrats are going to have to be briefed by our Border Patrol agents, our Secretary of Homeland Security. Let her and others in the Border Patrol explain exactly what's necessary. See, the problem with just legalizing folks or just creating a wall without either the interior enforcement measures, the reforms to chain migration, the reforms to the visa lottery system is that
right.
You only fix part of the problem and maybe you make it worse. What we need to do is create a situation where we're not here 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now negotiating because another several hundred thousand illegal immigrants came to the country.
What does the president mean when he says comprehensive immigration reform?
Well, I think he's talking about the issue broadly, saying that there are millions of people who've come here illegally who live here, and many of them have not committed violent crimes or violent acts. But we also need serious enforcement measures for those who have. We need to ensure that the border is fully secure not just through this bill, but through other measures. And then we need broad legal immigration reform. There's a lot of issues from merit-based immigration to reforming the H-1B visa system to rooting out fraud. I mean, there's a whole host of issues that we need to confront and tackle so we know who's coming into this country and we know that our immigration system has the primary priorities of protecting American national security and public safety and helping American workers in our economy. There's so much to tackle that doing it all at once in one fell swoop with a March 5th deadline doesn't seem practical.
Well, the March 5th deadline, though, is somewhat arbitrary just because of DACA, which there is nothing wrong with allowing it to just keep going because it puts more pressure on the Democrats. What could the Republicans use, though, as a bargaining chip to get all these other things once they give the Democrats DACA?
Well, I think Democrats have a whole host of priorities on immigration reform. They want to see legal status for other individuals who come into this country illegally. And that's something the president is willing to talk about and I think willing to discuss. But I think the first thing is first is that we now have a universe of issues where there is some agreement that this is sort of the ground for an initial debate and initial discussion. If we're able to get a bill together with this, it will provide good faith for further negotiation.
Okay, let me just stop for a moment. I want to pause on that point. Sure. Steve King has been warning that trading DACA amnesty for things that, in order to get the things that Republicans want, is going to lead to basically amnesties of any kind being used as a bargaining chip in every other immigration battle going forward. What you just suggested is that legal status is on the table for other groups of people, right?
What I'm saying is that a discussion about these issues is certainly on the table and that the president wants to invite that discussion. But part of that is, when you narrow the scope of a debate about a bill that has to be passed by March 5th, you shouldn't close the door on discussions in the future about other issues. But right now, we have several acute issues that have to get addressed. You can't have DACA without border security, without visa lottery system reform, and without an end to certain chain migration policies. So those are the things that have to be addressed in the immediate term.
Okay, let me ask you something about the bilateral the president had yesterday, because during that he again referred to the Russia collusion investigation as a hoax. I'm interested, do you find any elements, does the White House find any elements of the Russia investigation to be credible?
We don't find, frankly speaking, the genesis of this investigation appears to be this dossier, this kind of phony dossier that was paid for by the Clinton campaign. It seemed to both fill reporters' inboxes and law enforcement officials' inboxes with misleading information or false information, alleging all sorts of things that have not been corroborated. And that seems to be the basis for launching, these congressional probes, the FBI, others. You're starting to see things you've seen about this investigation within the FBI and within the Department of Justice, especially in the early stages, these text messages from agents involved, other things that show political bias. We think that, there needs to be, and the president's legal team has spoken to this, a real investigation of how the Department of Justice got here, how the FBI began this investigation, and what potential elements of political bias led to this. Because right now you're seeing a wall-to-wall investigation, you're seeing leaks across the board. What you're not seeing is an ounce or a shred of evidence of any kind of collusion between the Russian government and the Trump campaign. We just haven't seen it. That dog doesn't bark. And so, what we're seeing now is sort of what the president's called a witch hunt, and no evidence to back it up. And so we find sort of the whole inquiry and the line of questioning to be something that's not going to really add up to a whole lot.
All right. Rod Shaw from the White House. Really appreciate your clarity on a whole bunch of issues this morning. Appreciate that, sir.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Have you again soon.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Vince Kahn is with Mary Walter.
And joining us to sort this all out for us is Mark Krikorian. He's a nationally recognized expert on immigration issues, and he serves as the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. So who better to speak to about this big mess? Mark, good morning. Welcome back to Mornings on the Mall.
Good morning.
All right, let's cut through all of the mess and all of the noise about what President Trump had to say about Haiti and San Salvador, and let's get to the guts of this immigration bill. What has been floated so far? What is on the table as of right now?
Well, what all the talk is about is not even a bill yet. It's a deal that the Gang of Six in the Senate, basically the same people who brought you the Gang of Eight, have agreed to and went to brief the president on. And it's almost as though they came up with a proposal that was intended to insult the Republicans and the president. It would amnesty not just the DACA people, the ones who got work permits. It would amnesty all the other dreamers, so-called, people who could have gotten DACA but never applied for it. So it's much larger. It actually would amnesty their parents by giving them renewable work permits. You know, the whole point of this DACA and Dreamer thing was that they're adults now, but they came when they were minors and therefore shouldn't be held legally responsible for their actions. But their parents weren't minors. In addition, it does nothing really meaningful to get rid of chain migration and the visa lottery, and it throws some crumbs at the border and border spending. So it fails to address any of the important points that the administration and the Republicans are shooting for. And an important point is there's an actual bill actually introduced in the House by committee chairmen, important leadership figures, led by Congressman Goodlatte, that actually is very good, and that's more likely to be the real vehicle that we see at least debated and moved forward, as opposed to this thing with the Gang of Six is really more just a kind of a PR stunt, in my opinion.
So this Gang of Six bill, was this intended to sort of preempt anybody else's plan, this group of senators rushing to the White House to show the president what they had?
That's my sense, because there's a different group in the Senate that's less maximalist on immigration. They haven't actually finally put something together yet. So, yeah, I think this was an attempt to sort of be the first mover, as they say.
Let me ask you, though, about why we're even discussing DACA. Why are Republicans taking the bait on this? Why are Republicans bringing up DACA? Why don't we just let that expire? And if Republicans don't get what they want, DACA doesn't happen. Plain and simple, they don't have to deal with this.
Well, I mean, they don't have to. And the people who had DACA whose work permits are expiring, and they're expiring in early March, that's why there's a sort of a perceived deadline. There's a case to make for giving the DACAs a real amnesty instead of the illegal one that Obama gave them, but only if it's part of a package that will limit the fallout, that will limit the damage from that amnesty. And that's what these other provisions, like ending chain migration, what have you, are about. So I think it's a debate worth having, but you're right that there should be no sense of of being forced or required to agree to anything that Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham come up with.
Well, this group of lawmakers were the match that lit the fire yesterday, because in their conversations with the president, they suggested that they would reroute some of these diversity visa lotteries to people who were here under temporary protected status in the United States up until recently, to include from places like Haiti and El Salvador. The president, of course, responding now in those infamous remarks, why are we having all these people from crap hole countries coming here? And of course, I'm censoring that. What do you make sort of that statement and the underlying premise that we should decide that some countries are better than others when they send their immigrants?
Well, I mean, you know, ideally we're not going to have a country-based immigration system. We got rid of some of that in the 60s, but we still have a lot of national origins-based elements in our immigration system, which is why the Tom Cotton's proposal that the president has embraced to move toward a merit-based immigration system for the employment-based visas is really the way to go, because it's not asking you what country you're coming from. It would be asking you, you know, what's your education, skills, age range, that sort of thing, and you get a point total. And if you make the threshold, they pick, you know, you would be in the pool to be picked from, and it doesn't matter what country you come from.
Mm-hmm. So a genuinely colorblind immigration system.
Exactly, exactly, which is not really what we have even now.
If it's genuinely colorblind, why are the Democrats against it?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I think that answers itself in some degree. You know, it's interesting that the various pieces of the immigration system that the Republicans are trying to reform, each has its own, ironically, ethnic constituency group. For instance, the big family
yep.
chain migration category, it's for brothers and sisters of U.S. citizens. Well, the Asian activist groups have adopted that as their pet immigration plan because there's a lot of people from the Philippines and elsewhere in those waiting lists.
Mark,
yep.
We have almost no time, but I want to share with you what the White House said to us yesterday. Listen to this comment.
Well, I think Democrats have a whole host of priorities on immigration reform. They want to see legal status for other individuals who come into this country illegally. And that's something the president is willing to talk about and I think willing to discuss. But I think the first thing is first is that we now have a universe of issues where there is some agreement that this is sort of the ground for an initial debate and initial discussion. If we're able to get a bill together with this, it will provide good faith for further negotiations.
So the president open to talking about other amnesties in the future, the White House is saying. I was stunned by that.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I think I am too. But there's all kinds of things we have to fix first.
Yep.
The reason we're dealing with DACA is that they're a sympathetic and unique subgroup of illegal immigrants. They're unlike any other group of illegals. And so it makes sense to package them into some of the steps we need to take.
All right, Mark, thank you very much. Unfortunately, out of time this morning. We'll chat with you again soon. Busy issue here.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. More of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Joining us right now, Ed Henry, Fox News Chief National Correspondent. Ed, welcome back to Mornings on the Mall. So glad
Thank
to have you.
Thank you so much. Good to see you both.
Now, obviously, the big story that has just overshadowed everything this week is what the president allegedly said yesterday while
yeah.
talking immigration. Was there something else? Now, we'll talk to you about that, but is there something else, though, that hasn't gotten the attention that you think it deserves that has happened recently?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we can start with this other story and work our way back to immigration. I reported last night on Shannon Bream's show that there are more text messages coming. I'm being told by people around the government that there are more text messages coming from those FBI officials, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. There's going to be more damaging information coming out in pretty short order here in the next couple of weeks. About you know what was happening at the FBI before the election, anti-Trump messages, pro-Clinton messages, all of that. We've heard that before. Why it may be different this time is that I'm also hearing that you know some key lawmakers on the Hill in both parties were finally able to get access to those FISA warrants over at the Justice Department. These are very sensitive documents. That basically these were the documents that allowed the Obama administration, at the end of the Obama administration, to conduct surveillance of some Trump officials. This has been hotly debated about whether it was appropriate or not. And the key here is that I'm being told that there's going to be information coming out that suggests that that dossier that's been such a big source of controversy was at least used in part to justify that surveillance of American citizens.
I think it was on your network, Ed, that Senator Lindsey Graham recently sort of suggested that the court wasn't fully told about the documents that were put in front of them. And to me, I was left with the impression that they weren't told that the Hillary Clinton campaign was involved in financing that dossier when it was used as a predicate for a FISA warrant. Are you hearing anything like that?
I think that's one of the possibilities I'm hearing from people behind the scenes. I think another possibility is that the FBI could have, and I underline we haven't seen the documents yet, so I want to be careful and stick with the facts. But it's possible that the FBI suggested, you know, in these warrants that they submitted to the FISA court, you know, that secretive court, to get the permission for surveillance, that they could have suggested that more information in the dossier was verified and that they had done their own verification, when we're not really clear whether or not that information was verified. So the point being, you know, to conduct this kind of surveillance, we've always been told, at least, that it's a very high bar before the government is going to conduct surveillance on American citizens.
Could I ask you, again about those texts, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, for a moment, because yesterday in an interview with the Wall Street Journal, the president suggested that those texts were treasonous, that because they talked about an insurance policy against Trump if he should get elected. Is your sense that any more about the insurance policy nature of those texts will come out?
I don't know the nature of the text yet. I'm just hearing from people close to the investigation telling me that there are a lot more text messages coming. And, you know, the ones we've seen previously haven't been positive for the FBI. So, you know, one would expect that we're going to see more that are damaging. But I have to be honest that I don't yet have the texts themselves. And so it's hard to tell whether it's going to go down that same road of a quote-unquote insurance policy, you know, which suggested that there are people at the FBI who were rooting, not just rooting for Hillary Clinton, but this goes further. This is why, I mean, because to me, what people have missed about the story, this is America. You know, you have the First Amendment. That's what I use, you use, and all of us, and every American citizen has the ability to have their own private political views, and sometimes public if you want to speak out. But the question is whether or not it impacted the FBI's investigation, whether they did a fair investigation of Hillary Clinton and the email server, number one. And number two, on the insurance policy question, those were text messages suggesting, okay, well, if somehow Donald Trump wins, we got to come up with some way to sort of knock him out here. And is that why they, you know, launched this big investigation of Donald Trump? Maybe not, but you're right. Those text messages about insurance policy raised a lot of eyebrows.
Ed, quick question about the FISA warrant and the way in which we're alleging and assuming it was obtained. Presenting it not truthfully, is that illegal, or were there any laws broken there?
Well, that is a question, and we can't go there just yet until we get a better sense of, you know, on what information was included, and as you suggest, not included in the warrants. But I guess one way of answering the question is, yes, there could be legal jeopardy, but as long as you use the word could, we don't know that anyone broke laws. But I think that's part of what some of these lawmakers on the Hill are trying to get at, which is exactly how were these warrants obtained to conduct this surveillance. And I think it's a question that some people at the FBI and Obama holdovers from the Justice Department don't really want answered, which is why you saw Christopher Wray, the current FBI director, and Rod Rosenstein over at the Justice Department run over to Speaker Paul Ryan's office about a week ago, kind of demanding that he intervene so that they didn't have to turn over these documents. Ryan said, go take a walk, basically. We want these documents. So to be clear, the Justice Department and the FBI did not turn them over, so lawmakers don't have copies because they're afraid of it leaking. But last Friday, some senior lawmakers, I'm told, went over to the Justice Department, a secure room, and viewed these documents for the first time. So that's why, you know, we don't have the full picture yet, but I think we're about to get a lot more transparency.
Ed, we've got just 30 seconds left here. Earlier this week, the president of the United States had a meeting with lawmakers, said, bring me something, I'll sign it. Lawmakers show up at the White House yesterday, and the president was furious with what he saw. Is this immigration process scuttled right now?
Yeah, I think it is. And look, I mean, I think that's why the vulgar language, you're seeing so much attention on that. President probably shouldn't have said that, obviously. Other presidents have used vulgar language. But look, bottom line is it's not just offensive. The language politically hurts him in these negotiations because you're right, a couple of days ago it looked like folks were coming together. And I think now the language, but also more importantly maybe the substance of what he was presented, is just not there yet. So they're not close to a deal.
Fox News Chief National Correspondent Ed Henry, thanks as always for joining us on Mornings on the Mall, sir. Nice to have you. Look forward to your reporting today.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
You know, I've met Meghan McCain a couple times over the years, and she's always been a perfectly lovely person. But in terms of, like, her actual politics on television, I'm always like, oh, you know, whatever. I don't think she's ever been better than her being on The View, though. Because she actually has been the combative conservative voice when necessary. And yesterday, Michael Wolff, the author of Fire and Fury, shows up. and sits down for an interview. And boy, did Megan read him the Riot Act, because there's all these errors in the book, and there's people who are denying that they even said things that are appearing in the book that's been savaging Donald Trump, going after the president of the United States as being mentally incompetent and all these various things. Listen to this exchange. I just want to take you through Meghan McCain's exchange with Michael Wolff yesterday, and listen to how nervous he gets as he tries to sort through all of her tough questioning. Go ahead.
There are a lot of factual errors in here. So I want to know from you is, what do you say to the people?
I regret mixing up Mike Berman and Mark Berman. The Berman brothers are have my apology.
You know, I think this hits us. I read your book, and I think this hits a special place for me because my family has been the subject of a book like this, Game Change. And Game Change was written, ironically, people like Anna were asked, and thank you for not giving interviews to those guys. A lot of disgruntled staffers give what traditionally in situations like this, it's the disgruntled staffers who aren't loyal to their principal that give interviews like this. So I'm curious, when you talk about staff, you didn't talk to his cabinet. Did you ever interview Jared and Ivanka? And how can I trust some of these quotes when, again, Tony Blair, Tom Barrack, Kate Walsh, Anna Wintour, all these people who are denying these quotes and stories attributed
to him? I think you have to look at the other people who are not denying, and actually
Steve Bannon. Okay, there's Steve Bannon. Yeah, he's not denying. He got fired.
One unique thing about her on The View is she actually researches what she's going to talk about. The other ones just sit there and spew. They do no research, have zero idea what they're talking
about. Like, Whoopi is just looking at her like, where'd you find all this stuff out? She's like, the internet. What are you talking about?
Well, because they're all driven by feelings, and she's actually driven by facts. I would not want her job for all the world, though. She's like a lion tamer. She's got a whip and a chair and a den full of lions.
Well, she's actually working. That's the point. I mean, she's actually doing her job. She's preparing, as you said, for this, and she's doing a good job. And further, she goes into something that I think is really interesting. This notion that Michael Wolff reported on a dinner. Remember, there's a dinner scene in the book that includes people like Roger Ailes, and it later came out that dinner was actually at Michael Wolff's home. It also came out that dinner was off the record. Now, we have a Washington audience. Most people are familiar. But if you get to an agreement with a journalist where it is considered off the record, that means the contents of that meeting or conversation will not be reported unless you change the status of that conversation. Michael Wolff did not honor that. Meghan McCain pressed on that issue.
I'm not saying that they aren't idiots for honestly letting you around and giving you that kind of access, because quite frankly, had you invited me to your house at any point before this book, I would have said, hell no, of course not. I don't go to journalists' house and start dishing about anything private in the political circles I'm in. I'm just confused. Were you friends with Steve Bannon and Roger Ailes beforehand, and you were like, come to my house for an off-the-record dinner, and then you reported on it, or was it on the record?
Yes, no, fair question, and I'll tell you what happened. This was actually an off-the-record dinner. But two things happened.
That's why people hate journalists, by the way. It's why I don't believe in the concept of off the record, this right here.
Okay. Boom, slam dunk.
So, I would always be careful about that. But at any rate, two things happened on that dinner. Roger Ailes died, and...
Not at the dinner. Because you said two things happened at that dinner. He didn't die at the dinner. Just saying.
The food.
Or the company.
The food was very good. I cooked the food. It was good. Okay. With Roger Ailes' death, it seemed to me that an off the record died with the death of the source.
Oh, interesting. I'm sure Roger Ailes, his friends and family really appreciate that.
I think there's a fine line you walk with that, and it is absolutely a judgment call that a quote-unquote journalist makes, right? I mean, do you, you're a journalist in your other hat. You put the hat on of the Daily Caller. Are you then bound by that forever, or is there some point in time, like a certain period of time passes, you know, 20 years, and so now you can say something where the person dies?
The notion is, if you want to make something on the record, go back to that source in some capacity. Obviously, he's dead here, but I don't think his death necessitates that all of a sudden you're free to share it, because it's not just Ailes that lives on. It's his legacy. It's the things that he built. It's the people around him. And when he says off the record, it's not just maybe to protect him. It's to protect the other things in his life that he cares about.
Okay.
So at least those are the types of things that should be conceived of. By the way, how did he get this idea in his head? Turns out it was Steve Bannon that helped him think this through. Go ahead.
Still, Steve Bannon understood it was off the record. But not long after Roger died, Steve said to me, "You're going to put that on the record, aren't you? You're going to use that.
I mean,
that was history." I took
Steve that. Bannon
he
has
is
not.
Crazy.
But Steve Bannon has not denied one thing in the book. Am I right?
Yeah, okay. And there's that too. But it's Bannon who pushed Wolf to be like, "Okay, remember what Al said? Put that on the record."
Yeah. Well. Why? But this is what I don't understand. It just goes back to I still can't wrap my head around why he would do that. I just can't wrap my head around it.
Why would Steve Bannon did all of this?
Right. Why would he then? And here's the other thing. Can you believe anything Wolf says? There's been so much discrediting of him and what's in the book. I don't know if you can believe anything he says. How do we know Steve Bannon really said that? I don't buy anything anymore.
Not only are people who are quoted in the book denying their own quotes, with the exception, again, of Steve Bannon, but just basic things are completely wrong. Like John Boehner leaving Congress, the date is years off. Years off. So, you know, I guess in the reprint of this book, they're going to have to correct a whole bunch of things. But there are various things in the book that are wrong. And, you know, he says in this interview with The View, he's like, "Look, I'm a journalist. I'm a book writer. What would it be a journalist?" You know, and he also said in the interview that this was not about him, that the book is not about me. Well, it is about you in one sense. What's your credibility? And can the reader trust what they're reading? And that really matters, because you're reporting on, as you say, explosive allegations about the president of the United States. So in order for us to feel like we have any confidence in it whatsoever, we should have confidence in you as a messenger, as a person who's expressing it to us. How many times have we heard in the last week that this rings true, therefore it's good enough? How many journalists have treated it that way? It rings true, therefore it's good enough. No, that's not the standard. Why are you all spending all of your time bragging about the importance of journalism school when you can't even get to the basics of what it means to be credible? When you can't even get past the idea that ringing true is not enough, you need to actually back it up. So Michael Wolff facing scrutiny as he goes to The View in an unlikely place, going to The View and facing that scrutiny.
He probably thought it was going to be friendly fire.
I know.
Boy, was he surprised. So good for you, Meghan McCain.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Oh, poor Megyn Kelly. Girl can't catch a break. So she was interviewing Maria Kong yesterday. Maria Kong is a fit mom. She's a fitness blogger. She's 37 years old.
Love those fitness moms, by the way.
I'm sure you do. So Megan's interviewing this woman yesterday on her show. And I'm going to let you hear how that interaction went and figure out where it all went horribly awry.
To. That's what you should do.
Yeah.
You should parlay the shaming thing into a professional business.
Well, you know,
because some of us want to be shamed. When I was in law school and I was gaining weight, I said to my stepfather, "If you see me go to that kitchen one more time, you say, 'Where are you going, fat?'" Right? And it works.
Well, you know, my husband does that to me all the time. I tell him my goals, and, you know, if it's early in the morning and he sees I'm still in bed, he's like, "What are you doing in here?"
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm eating something like chips, he'll take the bag and he'll hide it. And I don't feel ashamed about it because I know I told him what my goal was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
See, you know, if my husband did that, there would be retribution later.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, boy. Oh, my
gosh. This sounds so dangerous.
So Megan went there, and so the Twitter sphere went crazy about Megyn Kelly fat shaming.
Of course.
That fat shaming's okay. And Meghan McCain also joined in on it, and Meghan McCain tweeted, "I was publicly fat shamed," because she can't spell shamed, "early on in my career, and it sent me to therapy. Trust me, there are real life ramifications for fat shaming of any kind. It is never acceptable. We should be fostering a healthy culture that celebrates all women of all sizes." Here's the thing, Megan. I don't understand why this is such a terrible, horrible thing at all.
I got to tell you.
Go ahead.
This seems like treacherous waters. This seems like a trap. Like, if you're a man and your wife or your girlfriend says to you, "Hey, if I'm ever eating too much, would you just tell me, like, hey, fatty, you know, just remind me. Yeah, sure. And that those words will never come out of my mouth. There's no way. This is a trap.
This is a trap. You have a wonderful marriage to a wonderful woman.
Yes.
So she said to you, like, she had a habit that was unhealthy. All right, what about smoking? Smoking is unhealthy. Being obese is unhealthy, right?
I agree.
They're both unhealthy. Yet it's okay to tell someone to stop smoking and to tell them it's going to kill them and it's going to hurt them and it's unhealthy. That's okay. But you can't do the same thing with food. How come?
Because one of those involves a constructive conversation. The other one involves what Megyn Kelly said, which is yelling, "What are you doing, fatty?" as they walk their way to the kitchen. So I think there is a difference. I think it's possible to have that. I'm not saying you can't talk to your significant other about their health choices. You should. In fact, if you care about them, you should help them care about the things that'll keep them alive longer or whatever. But yelling insults at them because they've requested it is, I think, especially treacherous for a man to indulge that particular. So, if you know, she's like, for that a moment, in one moment, like, hey, you know, next time you see me do that, just be like, hey, fatty. And then you actually do that. I'm not sure. That feels perilous. That feels kind of like a coin toss.
Robert in Manchester. Good morning, Robert. You're on Mornings on the Mall. Good morning.
I would never, ever tell her she looked overweight. Because you do nothing but cause a fight, but she is more than happy to poke at my belly and say, "You stand to need to lose a few pounds."
But with women, before you start that conversation, in every man's mind, before you start that conversation, you think to yourself, "This is going to last for maybe half an hour. If I say this next sentence, this is a huge investment of time. I'm going to have to handle this."
You are very generous. A half hour.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM WMAL.